made a couple of great plays in left field, and he may have just added his second home run of the game. Say goodbye to this one.
Reardon delivers. There's a fly ball, deep left center field, right looking up. He did it! He did it!
And that's sliced to left field, and it's another chance for Mitchell, and he makes a fair-handed catch!
In my entire life, I've never seen that happen.
Fernandez, left field, it's deep! It is good!
And welcome to the ball game. It's getting near the business end, Rob. It's doubleheader weekend and a huge weekend, as it turns out, for the finals, and
yes,
isn't it?
Good evening, Phil. Good evening, Jack. Good
evening,
Neil.
Jack's back in.
Or should we say good morning?
Yeah, it's good morning, but it's good to see Jack
forecasting.
Back.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, big weekend of baseball. Should sort out where everything sort of start lying a little bit clearer.
No, that's right. In both leagues, we've got a situation where this weekend is massive. That the double header in the Dandenong League is going to have great bearing on the finals, and
which is what you want.
Absolutely, yeah. Fantastic. And we've got some key games in our league that every week there's games that change the four, and teams get an opportunity to consolidate, and they get knocked off, and then other teams win, which keep them in it, and it's
a couple of surprise results along the way.
And we'll talk all about that a little later on
as we go. So look, let's start with Major League. We can't get Willow in. It's a bit too cold for Willow, and I think he's in a kid zone or something like that. Well, time zone, I don't know, what do they call
it?
Doing the dad duties.
Imagine Willow on some of those machines, couldn't
you?
Get out of the road, kids, it's my turn.
Building up some tickets for the end of season so he can get away, surely.
Absolutely. Look, some interesting stories. We've all got a couple of interesting stories, but the Pete Rose saga's an interesting one, isn't it?
Done and dusted.
Hall of Fame, no hope.
Done and dusted.
Until won't get in until he dies. You reckon
all the bobbleheads in the world is not going to say yes.
That's right.
Look, I'm very clear on this.
Yeah.
You cannot bet in a game against your own team and expect to be regarded as being somebody who can go into the Hall of Fame. That absolutely disgraces every other person who is in the Hall of Fame if he's to be inducted into it. No question what he did on the field.
Oh, brilliant.
No question he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But you can't do what he did off the field and get away with it.
And
unfortunately, character comes into it at the end of the day as well.
Of course,
it's not just a purely stat-based award. It should be held among, you know, the top echelon, which it is. But character, for mine, is a big part of that. So if he's proven to be doing that, and some of those stories are coming to light, then I think that he's done for mine.
Well, the gambling, there's no. He's admitted to that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's proven, done and dusted. All the rest of it.
Is he sorry he's got caught? Do you reckon that's...
Listen, let's not beat around the bush. It annoys the living suitcase out of me. Every sportsman, they sit up... When they get done for something, they sit up in these press conferences and I'm really sorry and I've got to win back the trust of my teammates and the supporters. What a load of cocky, you know what. They're only remorseful because they got caught. If they used their brains and thought about it, they wouldn't have done it in the first place.
This seems to raise its head every couple of years. It's been doing that for the last 24, 25 years, I think, 26 years since he's had his first opportunity to get in. And I don't know why, but wasting breath on it's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because it's never going to happen.
Yep. So,
well, maybe MLB should just come and say...
Forget about it.
It ain't happening.
Yeah.
You know, he's did ABC that actually transgressed the spirit of the game. It's why the AFL don't allow their coaches and their players and anybody who's connected with a football team to bet, because it's the image of the game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know? Also, it's probably you can align it with Gary Ablett Sr. Why he hasn't sort of taken that extra step, you might say.
Well, it gets back to what Jack was saying. It's character, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Some things happen, yeah. That's right.
So basically, it's why waste your breath on it? Because it's never going to happen. Not while we're standing on this planet, not while my kids are standing on the planet, not while their kids are going to be standing on the planet. It just won't happen.
Now, Jack, you're very good on all this exit speed and that sort of stuff. Look at the stat cast, exit velocity.
Am I? Here we go.
Well, we were talking about it earlier on, and it's Guy Sospedes.
Cespedes.
Cespedes, thank you.
There you go.
One of the New York players, and it was looked at 110 kilo miles per hour on the way.
Just
out
a little bit quick. Just a little bit quick.
And estimated they're going to go 440 feet. Now, I know blokes have hit it further than that, but...
that's only a line drive too.
I wouldn't like to be an infielder in the big leagues.
No, that's right.
You wouldn't want to have dodgy eyesight, because if that's coming at 110,
yeah,
you got no chance.
Yeah.
It's actually interesting. One of the standard objective tests for at any major league tryout camp, and then we've developed them through our state junior program here, is the exit speed velocity.
Mm.
And the way we've always done it through the state junior program is with a radar gun with the kids hitting the ball off the tee. Now, you've got to take into account if hitting a stationary ball versus hitting something that's coming at 95 mile an hour, that affects the exit speed dramatically. And it's the same as we don't know whether Cespedes hit a 95 mile an hour fastball or hit a 75 mile an hour changeup.
Yeah.
You know, that actually does have a big bearing on it. But we used to reckon if a kid had an exit speed velocity of somewhere around 80 mile per hour, that would put him at this, and we're talking about a 15-year-old
yep.
kid, that would put them in the top 5 to 10% of that group.
Mm.
So, you know, 30, and you think, oh, it's only 30 mile an hour. It's massive.
Oh, it's huge.
Massive.
Yeah, bad head speed. So looking at the standings at the moment, Boston and... Because we're talking about this one as well. They're now two games ahead of the Yankees.
I think we just found the reason Willow's not here. And,
yeah.
And the Yankees have just dropped out.
Yankees are alive, are they?
Nah, they've just dropped out, lost three.
Oh.
Giving them a three-game lead to the Red Sox. So we can maybe time zone was a bit of an excuse, I reckon.
Okay.
But yeah. It is interesting. I think like that division... That it's going to ebb and flow again throughout yeah, the
Tampa Bay's still well in it.
They're still hanging in.
Yep.
But, you know, with the acquisitions that both teams made at the trade deadline, you know, that's really going to go right down to the wire. And I think it's probably a pretty fair bet that whoever does run second in the AL East is probably going to pick up one of the wild card slots,
yep.
I would have thought.
Yep. And Central, it'd
be interesting finding that out too.
Yeah.
Historically, a lot of the AL East team is a wild card, that second person. So that's it's a really strong division. So wouldn't be surprised if both New York and Tampa Bay, obviously Kansas City's the other one at the minute.
But it's interesting. But, Tuesday, New York, the Yankees were half a game in front.
Yeah.
And then they're playing now.
By the weekend,
series, they're playing behind. A series against Boston. They've lost the first three, and things have swung around again. So those series, and typically too, that the way the league tends to fixture in the last third of the year, Yankees and Tampa and Boston seem to play each other a lot in series. So those head to head series are going to have a massive bearing on
the change a fair bit between now and the end.
Yeah. In Central Cleveland, two games ahead of Kansas, which is the third one in the wild card race, as Jack mentioned.
Yep.
And in West, well, that's been over for a while, hasn't it? Houston, 15 games.
Seattle, the Angels, they're only two games out of the wild card, so it's pretty
it's still
tight.
Involved.
Yeah,
it's still involved. In the Nationals, the Washington remain 12 games ahead. Even though Miami had a better week than them, caught up too, but it's a long way behind there. And Chicago and Milwaukee are locked together at this point.
I think you're finding the Cubs are just hitting straps, and plus, Milwaukee are just limping to the line, I think.
Plus, they've got a couple of games up their sleeve that they haven't played, so that sort of technically puts them...
I don't think I've seen the Cubs at full strength this year. Yeah. They've had a lot of their arms go down, and some of their arms haven't been... Like, Arrieta's had a down year. Lester, I don't know if he can still pick off at all. So, they're still fine-tuning. No, I think he got one this year. So,
well, he picked a bloke off, or he made one pick off.
He did, and he hit a home run the other day too. So,
and he stole a base too. So,
Lester's hitting form, but I think the big question with the Cubs will be, can Rizzo and Bryant power them through in that heart of the order? I think Bryant's had a down year stats-wise. Mm. He's had a good patch of games, but he hasn't put it together like he has in previous years. So if he can get going... He's a hot bat in their lineup.
They just really haven't been dominant enough like they were last year. They really just tore that league up.
No, and I think you find it, especially when the Royals won theirs, they didn't get going again. I don't know if it's playing that extra month compared to the other guys in their division that they can figure out a way where they can play poorly enough in the middle of the year just to fine-tune some things, get their at-bats, and then as they build, I think you can find, like, Cleveland will start making a push as well. Those teams that have been to the postseason most recently can find a way to click at the right time. They make those trip, you know, the minor leaguers come up in September, and they're the right minor leaguers to come up at that time to give them that spark to get the veterans going. But you'll find that the Cubs now will probably win their division by like 10 games. That's my prediction. They'll just roll on from now on.
To me, the missing link for the Cubs, and I know they didn't have him last year, is Schwarber. He needs to get back on track.
Well, what's his position? That's the key. He came up as a catcher. He went to the outfield. He had knee issues. He killed it in the World Series last year because they had something else about him. It was the two long shots, the Indians and the Cubs, and one of them had to break their drought, but he hit something like 600 or 700 for him when it mattered most.
They got to persevere with him in left.
But they had the luxury there too of also using him as a DH in the American League Park.
100%.
So you didn't have to go anywhere near the field. Just pick up a bat, swing, and just do it.
Yeah. So the question will be: if Schwarber can hit, we know he can hit, but he's not hitting. Okay. And where's his position? Because if he can't get in the field and do something defensively, which I don't think you can play, you can't play him ahead of Zobrist, who can cover the outfield. You can't play him in left field when Bryant can go out there as well. Like, that's the thing with Joe Maddon teams is versatility, and he's not offering it to allow him to get those at bats. So
and it's very interesting.
Then the question with that. Sorry, Wolf, the question with that then is, why didn't they trade him when he had currency at the end of last year?
It's a really good question. His name will come up forever, most likely. You know, they traded in Alex Avila along with Justin Wilson, some bullpen help there. But, you know, they've got Contreras who catches and then plays in the outfield, which was what Schwarber was doing last year. So where will they go? I don't know. The best time would have been to move him last year, but would they have won it if he didn't hit 700? So it's really up in the air with what they do with him going forward. But you saw when he went down to AAA, he hit something like 340 and he was straight back up, but he still hasn't clicked at the major league level. It'll be interesting when they all click.
I'm talking about trading him at the end of the year when he had currency.
The end of last year?
Yeah, off the World Series, not the mid-season trade. 100%. You're right, they needed him. They needed potentially to get him back in their lineup.
The answer is I'm not Theo Epstein. I don't get the Mega Millions. I'm not part of Moneyball. I don't understand it all.
I think where Schwarber's problem is, like I said, he's got bad knees. He's not an outfielder. His catching days are probably finished until he can get some decent knees. So he's basically just become a hitter. So off to the American League you go.
That's what should have happened. Hmm. Yeah. That's what I would have done. I'm big in the fantasy baseball, and I definitely would have traded him. So
I would have thought he was tailor-made for Yankee Stadium, DH and in Yankee Stadium.
Probably, but they signed Matt Holliday. So we'll just, who knows what's going to happen. But I think the NL West is a really strange division. You normally see the Giants up the top, but they're the second worst, if not the worst team this year. And three of those teams are in the pennant race right now. So it's really strange to not see the Giants with the lineup they've had, the acquisitions in Cueto and all that sort of stuff. Samardzija's been down since they brought him in, but, you know, Buster Posey leading a rotation should at least, you know, be there when it counts, but they're playing so bad. They're 42-68, miles off the pace. 20 games, in fact, off wildcard, and Colorado's third in their division in the second wildcard spot. So,
in that West, we've got Dodgers just a mile ahead.
Long way behind the Dodgers.
And Arizona and Colorado are neck and neck for the wildcard there. And
Arizona's my sneaky rough team. They're a potent lineup.
Yeah.
They are very potent.
With Martinez in that lineup now, sort of
JD Martinez, Goldschmidt, Pollock, Peralta. It's really quite deep and versatile. Yeah. It's just whether they can get. I think Chris Owings just went down with a thumb, so their middle infield will be what sets them apart come postseason. Because Ketel Marte come up from AAA, very lightly built, can run a little bit, but is he proven? Can he get the big defensive plays like a Andrelton Simmons from the Angels, who's renowned for his defense, that sort of thing? So it'll be interesting where they fit. But Dodgers, with the acquisition of Darvish, scary 1-2-3 punch, 4-punch, 5-punch with a bullpen of Kenley Jansen and the rest. So it'll be interesting.
A wise man once said, when it gets to the playoffs, good pitching always stops good hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree absolutely with what you're saying about that offensive lineup. But if they've got to face that sort of rotation, Greinke has to win every game he pitches in the postseason for them to be competitive.
And it's happened because the Giants did it with Bumgarner. Yeah. So
that's true.
A lot of one-horse teams have made it far. Whether they've won it, that's a different story. But it's an interesting race.
But I would have thought whoever's going to beat the Dodgers wins the National League. Mm.
Wouldn't be surprised if it's Dodgers-Yankees final with the acquisitions where the best teams are making the best acquisitions. But I still like Arizona as a sneaky, so write that down.
Let's have a look at some of the stats. Altuve's leading the batting. Not a bad, is it? 365 is a mile. Oh, it's
especially
not a mile.
Especially
he has more hits. 150.
It's a tiny strike zone to throw to.
Yeah, that's true.
He could write a Melbourne Cup winner if he wanted to.
Nah, he's a good player.
He's a ripping player.
And Turner's second.
He's a lowdown Mazaire for it.
In front of Judge.
Yeah, well, Judge has tapered off.
He hit his 34th today, I think. Yeah. It'll be interesting. He's striking out more, so yeah, it's really tight. I think Carlos Correa was having an MVP year. Yeah, well,
Who's the last guy to win MVP and Rookie of the Year in the same season?
Trout, surely. I think, unless Cabrera won it.
You'll see, Trout's just become, he's equal to...
Yeah, who is Trout? Who's this Trout guy?
For the only Angels player in his first 6 years to belt up 20 runs.
Could be Trout 20 home runs, in terms of Rookie of the Year MVP, but it could also be Harper, just thinking about it. I'm not too sure.
I don't know whether he won... Oh, he's won them both, but I don't know that he won them both.
The same year. Trout would be my guess.
I don't know the answer.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's quite interesting. Yeah. The Angels, that the two blokes have had six seasons of 20 home runs plus. One's a Salmon, the other one's a Trout. Out of the same stream.
Well picked up. Well picked up. And just quickly on the pitching stats, Kershaw still got the most wins. He hadn't thrown for a week, and he's another couple of weeks off. 15-2.
His back's probably sore from carrying the Dodgers.
and I think he's leading they're still leading the ERA as well, 204. And
how many wins has Schwarzer second? Got?
12-5, and his ERA is 220. Okay. So they're the top two there. Look, guys, bit of a break. We'll come back after the break and we'll talk DBA Saturday, bit of DBA Sunday as well. Listen to the ball game. We'll be back soon.
Hi, Chris Thode here, Mercedes-Benz Mornington. We offer exceptional customer care from sales, finance and insurance, right through to servicing and parts. Visit our experienced team today at Mercedes-Benz Mornington, 29 Mornington Type Road, Mornington, or check out the website.
Did you know that the Bendigo Community Bank branches support our local sporting clubs? Our sponsor, the Bendigo Community Bank branches in Rye, Dramana and now in Rosebud, are supporting the local community and putting the people back into banking.
Ishka has evolved from a local craftsman's dream into a reality which strives to positively change the world. Since Ishka's arrival in Frankston, they have brought an international style, colour and brightness which has been embraced by the shoppers and the local community. Visit Ishka online at ishka.com.au or pop into their Frankston store at Shop G, 18B Bayside Shopping Centre or call on 9418 9359. Come in and save up to 25 to 75% off throughout the store. Ishka, a station sponsor.
And welcome back to the ball game. And we should mention that we're brought to you by Adams Pest Control. You probably already know the Pete and the Possum Man. We'll be playing it on Sunday, of course, at the big game at Frankston.
Well,
and
we can pop round to a certain house in Carrum Downs at the moment. There's a bloody herd of the bastards running across my roof.
Okay. So apart from possums, what do they do?
Everything, all commercial and residential pest control. It doesn't matter what the problem you have. Doesn't matter what the area, the company. Great thing about the company, entirely Australian owned, no multinationals. So if you've got any requirement, any pest issues in your business or your house, Adams Pest Control, 9645-2388.
Okay. Let's look at the first game on Saturday. Dandenong playing Bond Beach. What was interesting last week, though, a draw, Dandenong and Chelt. Now, a Dandy, because they're a long way ahead, and we know they'll be saving their arms.
Are they saving their arms?
Well, we know that he will plan it that way.
You mean for this weekend? I thought you meant last weekend.
Well, I was talking last weekend. I was just wondering whether he's pulling back on Chico's workload leading into the finals? That was my question. I haven't heard on who pitched or how many innings they pitched or anything.
I haven't heard who pitched, but I can assume that probably Mark Surtees would have had a throw. Five ball. Who's to know? It could have been daylight run out, finish the game early. Cheltenham could have had a good day out.
Good result for Cheltenham, I think. Picking up an important point for them.
It's kept them in the hunt.
It has absolutely kept them in the hunt.
So we'd have to say the dandy against Bond Beach, who
you would think so
struggled again. Although 12-7, you saw them last week.
Definitely didn't struggle.
They hit a bit better than the first time you played them.
Well, I think anyone out in the elements last week would have felt the wind.
Yes,
it was blowing a gale, but they put together some really good at-bats collectively through the day. I think we got called in the 8th or 7th or something like that. So I don't know of another team that hasn't played 9 or how many games we've played 9 innings, but something's got to change, I think, to 2-hour games or 7-inning games or something. Because judgment calls on light this year.
Made a difference in a couple of games from what you hear.
But even personally, from our team, you know, hearing an umpire say time and game, it's going to get dark rather than it's dark, and you kind of get a bit fiery with that white line fever. So it's to take all the judgment out. Let's make the umpires have an easier job and say we're playing 2 hours or two and a half or 2 hours 15. We've only got to go by sunlight times when the news guy says it's going to get dark at 5 o'clock. Yeah. Like
you can tell.
That should be a deadline or something like that.
There's a difference between when it's dark and when it's too dark to play baseball. And that can actually vary a little bit depending on where you're playing.
But we need to try and eliminate interpretation,
I couldn't agree more.
I've been talking to a couple of guys during the week and I'm really starting to think, Melbourne Winter Baseball League's got it right. A 2-hour game with a 5-minute rule and generally you're done before 5 o'clock.
We would never be playing at 5 o'clock.
And there's no light issue then because once you get to 5 o'clock in winter, it starts to get dark.
I couldn't tell you of a game in the last 4 or 5 years where we were still playing at 5 o'clock.
And I think the DBA's got to look at that and say, look, we're just going to take it out of the umpire's hands.
Contributing factor is the 2:30 start time as well, which I brought up when I was first in here.
We start at 2:35.
Finish at 4:40.
No, we have a two-hour game with a 5-minute rule. Now we've been involved in a game this year. Now, admittedly, it was a pitcher's duel, 1-all draw that we got 9 innings in within the time. We played against Heathmont last week, 8 innings. The GMBC game, we didn't quite get to the 5-minute rule. It was equal innings, and the umpire called time and game. Because in his view, there is not he was absolutely 110% right, we were not going to be able to play
another full innings.
Particularly,
I've definitely seen that shift in our league where the umpires are forecasting the complete innings of play.
The umpires are a little bit between a rock and a hard place, though, because let's just say Team A is a run in front. And he says, righto, we've got 2 minutes to the 5-minute rule. We're going to go out and play another innings. And the team that's behind by a run scores half a dozen.
Mm.
And we've now got to a stage that it's 5-5. Yeah. It is nearly pitch black. He's then got the decision, geez, do we play a half inning here because we've got to get the equal half innings and it's now completely unfair?
Or do we revert back,
which creates more problems, I reckon, than playing the half innings. So I don't have a problem if we're almost on the 5-minute rule.
To have a clear cut.
To say, decision. You know what, I'm looking here and I reckon in 10 minutes it's going to be too dark to play.
Yeah, it's just a shift in terminology that I'm picking up where it's not, rather than just allowing play to happen and then calling it dark as it's dark, saying I can't go any further and then dealing with the result, well, we couldn't finish it. You'd hate to see a team go out there and time waste for that reason alone, but the interpretation or the messaging coming across is that it appears that they're forecasting those whole innings. We can't get through the 8th inning complete, so I'm going to shut it here. It's just a general shift that I'm noticing because I think a lot of results this year have finished with light in some way, shape or form.
Yep. That's the only time that it's happened, by the way. Every other game, 5-minute rules kicked in, game complete, no drama. So, I mean, I really think that, your league... Trying to play 9-inning games with a 2:30 start is pretty tough.
I really think they've got to start thinking seriously about it because you know, with the 2:30 start, you don't need to be playing at 5 o'clock. Like, last week, you know, Franks and Berwick started their ninth innings at 10 past 5. And it's a fair indicator to me that, you know, when the street lights are on, the clubhouse lights are on, every car going past the ground's got their lights on. That
Probably should be stopping, yeah. Right, let's look at the second game, and the game played last week when Boneo defeated Mornington did finish after 5 o'clock. That one went deep as well, but Boneo were leading all day, ended up winning 9-7. And Marcus Tomlin pitched. He hadn't pitched a great deal. He's not playing this weekend, but he pitched very well and hit very well, as you mentioned last week. Yeah. He's batting 440
or something. 440
yeah.
around there, yeah. And
so,
leading the home run.
Yeah, leading the home runs. So they're up against Chelsea.
So you should lead the home run derby at Boneo. It's a jet stream down there.
It is. Well, and
if he hasn't hit 10, he shouldn't win any award.
The wind was blowing out, I must say, last Saturday as well. So Boneo play Cheltenham. We've already talked about Cheltenham having a very handy point last week and starting to find a bit of form in the lead up to the possible playoffs.
Cheltenham's got to work out whether they're going to go hard and try and win this one, then see what happens on Sunday. Or if they try and hold back a bit, it might backfire on them. So yeah, the general consensus around here is that go hard on the Saturday and let Sunday take care of itself.
Got to win one before you can win two.
Yeah. I think looking at the other games, if I'm coaching Chelt, I'm going at Boneo with my best to make sure I win that.
And you've still got, they've still got a few up there.
Again, because the two teams that are there or thereabouts that you're competing against are playing each other.
Yes.
So they've got to go with their best as well.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, you're going to go with your best, and then playing Frankston on the Sunday, you already know that Frankston have used their best on Saturday, so it's your second stringers against their second stringers. Yep. I think it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think that they'll probably throw Jack, I'd think, and I'm guessing Stewie Matheson may start for Boneo there on the Saturday.
Well, it could be
Saturday.
An interesting game because, you know, Boneo's free swingers. And
Boneo will hit.
They're not going to die wondering.
Mm.
So, look, you know, Chelt's got to be on their best behaviour to, make sure they get the game.
So Marcus is not playing, correct?
Marcus is not playing for the weekend.
Cheltenham comfortably.
Yeah, he'll come back probably for the last two games, but he's missing this weekend.
Yeah, Boneo are pesky enough to challenge. Definitely, it's not a walkover game by any means.
Yep.
You've seen that Boneo can match it. You know, they're just not quite there, but they are pesky enough with Chelt.
Hmm.
Anything can happen. But it's no coincidence that Cheltenham have started getting some of their roster back,
yep,
and they've started putting good results against good teams. So it's not a coincidence there. They've always been a polished outfit. Blackmore's leading well. They've got a lot of kids.
Yep.
But they're playing the game the right way at the end of the day. So
yep, absolutely
I right. think they'll get over this one.
Yeah, they should get up, but it's going to take their best to get over it, I think.
Let's look at the third game. Dingley playing Frankston, and this is awesome. A month ago, might have to you, Jack, but from us looking outside, didn't look as big a game, but it's an enormous game now because Dingley are a game.
I think there was a voice
behind.
Around here that said we were a poor side. So it's a long season.
Well, first half of the year, you were struggling. That's
no,
the,
that, but
and you, now you've come together.
There was a set plan.
Opinions are allowed to change.
Opinions are wondrous things. But there has been a set plan for myself, which has been back the kids,
yep,
which we've done. And we've proven that once you get, you know, collectively a certain amount of at-bats, and that's dependent on the kid as well.
Mm.
There's no set rule, but the kids, I think we've got about six or seven under 19, and our oldest guy is Tony Sevig at 26. Mm. So we are young, and I've put guys in situations where if it was a state game or if it was a junior game or if it was a must-win, you'd pull them.
Yep.
But these kids need to learn different situations. They're wanting to further their baseball, so I'm putting them in tough situations. So when they get themselves in the crap by loading the bases after getting two out,
yep,
I'm not pulling them like a state program potentially would. I want to see what kind of mongrel they've got.
Yeah.
Or do they go into their shell and be the junior that they should, like, that's attributed to their age.
Yeah. I've been a firm believer, don't monocle a pitcher. If you get yourself into trouble,
making work a bit. Yeah.
Well, prime example is last week's result. We're playing Berwick. We lose 8-6. We gave up 6 runs in one inning. We had them beat. They put together one inning, but I left Braden out there to see what he could do in the situation. I could have pulled him after they got two hits and, you know, could have played that card and, you know, get him next time. But he goes home thinking, I've let the whole team down and we just had to kill the bleeding. Now, we fought back and made it whatever it was, 8-5, 8-6 in the end. But if I don't put them in the situation, when the push comes to shove this late in the year, how do I know if they'll perform then if I haven't seen it during the year? So I've been proactive in trying to do that from the start of the year. So yes, the results were probably never going to go our way, but I think you've seen a complete transformation with this young group. We had a tight game with Bonio. We not belted them, but we put together a fairly good score. We've had good games with Chelt. We've had a 5-0 loss to Dandenong, and then we lose 10-9 in the last, or 11-10 after Dandenong scored two in the last. We're running teams to the death knock. Berwick 8-6. You know, it's interesting what a young group can do. Do they believe their own hype? Do they falter? Do they go back to the shell? You know, it's really interesting going forward. I'd love to swing a bat tomorrow. I'd love to swing a bat going forward, but we need to trust the kids, and that's what I've told the committee at the start of the year.
So you're sticking with them this week.
We'll go with what
Frank
we've got.
What you got? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
We're trying to win both. We've got four games remaining, and we feel that we can't afford to drop any. So we need to go hard for four.
All right.
To make sure of it.
Up against absolutely the right philosophy.
Oh, I reckon that's a good philosophy. Absolutely. Yeah.
Might not come to fruition this year.
Might not.
But next year and the year after and the year after, that's when you'll reap the benefits of what you do.
And we've also, like, not to touch on anything lightly, other clubs will go through this in different phases. We've got three kids going to college in 3 weeks. So that's the third of our lineup with the potential of next year, you know, Jackson Boyd doing some amazing things and Tim Lane going to go away. So that's five out of the heart of a lineup that are going on to bigger and better things that I think is going to happen. So it says a lot from the development of all these guys in the right programs at this age that their focus is right there right now. So it's really good to see. And other teams. College, what's that?
Who you got going to college?
Sam Drummond, Mitch Wilcox, and Andy DiGio Van Battista.
Scrabble.
Nice. Yeah, alphabet.
Okay. Frankston, Mitch Bowen been number one thrower most of the season, Rob?
Yeah, he's been throwing well. Even when he sort of been struggling, he's sort of been just staying on top of it. And another no decision last week, another five innings, one unearned run. He's unfortunately the backup is the Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm.
And plus the fact, you know, the boys aren't scoring runs early to sort of give him enough sort of support to say, look, we can squeeze another six or seven out of you. But Frankston's got to do in their own hands now. They know what they've got to do. And you know, they realise that Saturday's very, very important. Talking to a couple last night, you know, they're pretty keen to atone for what happened last week. They weren't too happy about what happened last
week.
Went
down 6-5 to Berwick.
Yeah, well, it's a bit hard to feel the ball when you can't see it. But that's another story.
That's a discussion we had earlier, isn't it? Yeah.
But they're pretty keen. They're up for the fight. And, look, it's going to be a really good game.
Of course they should be up for the fight. They're there. You know, there's four teams going for two spots.
And Mornington and Frankston, they control their own destiny.
They do.
They keep winning, and it doesn't matter what happens with the teams behind them. They can't catch them.
But if they lose, and they open it up. And well, the last game is Berwick playing Mornington. And to me, last week, Mornington weren't hitting the ball as well. Lefty threw on the bat.
Yeah.
Josh Mulheron, with that injury, I think they're missing Josh because he's a good batter, pitcher when he's fresh.
Well, Josh has basically started. He's not throwing another ball.
Yeah, so he's got Willow's long way short of being able to get up on the mound.
He's about a season away.
Yeah. Matty Hardy came on and threw for a bit and beaned a couple. Well, didn't bean him, but he hit a couple of batters. He lost his radar in the second half of the inning.
They need Lukey Howell up and running.
Luke didn't pitch at all last week.
One innings, but it was... It's hard to win a game when you're behind, and you know. So and Lefty started and Barney got ahead early.
I think
and
the
stayed
honest
ahead.
Truth is that down Mornington, Lukey Howell's the ace.
Yep.
Oh, no question.
Yep.
You know, Lefty's still got a lot to learn. You know, he seems to find the bat.
And he didn't. I mean, I've seen him before, and he's got a bit of movement, but he wasn't getting any movement at all last weekend. Yeah. So whether it was just 1 week because he'd missed a couple of games, but whether it was just the 1 week or not, but he wasn't getting his movement going Saturday.
But Lukey Howell's the ace down there, and yeah, he's got to be leading from the front.
Well, if we scale it back, if we scale it up to a big league level, an ace of a staff, a Kershaw, a Darvish, a Scherzer, they're not on for 20 wins. They're not getting 20 and 0 on a year. So to look at our season, you know, lefty's not missing bats 1 week, or Lukey Howell, or, you know, for me, Boydie or whatever, or Mitch down at Frankston, they're not collectively on every week. So, you know, these arms, especially for Mornington, as you said, they control their own destiny. But it'd be interesting looking historically when they've had a chance to make the finals.
Mornington,
they
find a way not to get there.
Yeah.
A couple of times they've had
the last
a real
2 years. It even came down to the last game, and I think Pakenham got over for the fourth, like to get, not Pakenham to get in, but Pakenham beat Mornington. So it's
to put them in that position. Yeah,
it's really interesting. I don't know what the mentality is, but you look at AFL teams and things like Melbourne.
Yeah.
Put the expectation on them and they falter. So yeah. I don't want to curse Mornington because we've got to face them last round, which could have ramifications on positioning. But
yep.
Their destiny is that currently they're third, but what do they believe in going forward? How are they going to mentally atone for that crucial loss to Bonio?
Absolutely.
So it's an interesting point you make about pitchers not being on every time they go out.
Yeah.
And you're 110% right. What you need, though, is when a guy doesn't have his best stuff, the guy that
he's still competitive.
He can battle for you and keep you in the game.
Yeah.
And then your offense has got to give him support.
Yep.
I think
that's been Frankston's problem, isn't it?
I think
they don't give you any run support.
Yeah, the sign of a good pitcher is one who has got his good stuff, but he's got that grey area, and he just gets that strikeout when he needs to.
Can
strike
make a
out,
big
or,
pitch yep. when he needs
or,
to.
Yep.
Or give you a ground ball when you need it.
Which I think this league actually lacks is a big game pitcher.
Yep.
Like you saw it a couple of years ago with McGilvray. He was a big game pitcher.
He was.
Willow's a big game pitcher when he's up and firing.
Yep.
Is there a lot in this league that are big game pitchers? Surtees, they won a flag, but is he the big game pitcher, or is he just a workhorse?
From what I've seen,
he's more your workhorse.
What I've seen this year, Ryan Phillips has pitched really, really well. And maybe he's the best pitcher this year, but
I don't think he's got the stamina.
And you can't see him, and of course you can't see every game every week. I'm only going the bits that I've seen through the season. He's pitched well, and I've seen him.
You need the guy.
Used very sparingly.
You need the guy that in the big game
wants the ball.
You can give him the ball because he demands the ball, and you know he's going to get you into the seventh inning.
Yep.
Whether he's got his good stuff or he doesn't have his good stuff, he's going to battle hard enough for you
and find a way to get you in
the game in the seventh inning.
Correct.
Then you're half a mad chance.
Well, Frank's biggest problem this year is they've relied on one arm. Since Billy went across to the States, you know, it's been, well, I think Mitch has done most of it. He's up to about 74, 75 innings so far this year, which is an awful lot when you consider. And it's the backup.
Connor Miles' injuries affecting Frankston, I think, big time.
He's probably
a big time player,
he could probably throw
even for being a kid.
And he's missing in the outfield too. So
he is a big player for the future.
But the Achilles heel is our relief corps. They just haven't been sort of up to holding that lead or sort of, you know, just doing holding.
We haven't scored enough runs either.
Yeah, that's the other thing too.
So Berwick Mornington, boys, what are you thinking on that one? With
Berwick
thrown a
Berwick
bit around there.
I think Berwick.
If you're saying Mulheron's injured and Mornington are a bit scuffly, I think Berwick are just sneaking along.
Yeah, and they've inched their way up, haven't they? It's
been a slow build for them.
Yeah, and they've got their way to second, and now they're clearly second.
Were they 0-4?
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, now we're 12-5. Yeah. Well, that's a fair run.
That's a huge effort, so they've done well. Look, let's mention, what I think we'll just go to the Sunday games, and then we'll have our break and get over to the Winterball boys. So Sunday games, Bonio playing Berwick at Berwick.
Berwick will win.
I reckon Berwick as well. Bonio will run out of pitching by then unless something amazing happens.
Bonio, unfortunately, at this stage, are once a weekend.
Yeah, they are. And they need Marcus in there or Ryan Sinclair, who's not back this weekend, might be back for the last two. But, they're going to struggle by the Sunday, I would think. Mornington, Bond Beach.
I think this might save
their weekend for them, mightn't it? It's an interesting one, yeah. They should win that one.
Who
threw for Bond Beach when you played them last week? Johnny Hulse?
John Court.
Okay.
So we had a combination of Matt Bucci,
yep,
and Mitch Sheldon Collins.
Yep.
I think.
Yeah, well, Johnny
Which Hulse. I think is the right way to go, because I think John Hulse is one of the best catchers in our league.
Okay. Yeah.
He's got the best. The day I saw him arm.
Through, and he did okay. Did a good serviceable job.
I think he pitches like
job.
A catcher, and I think he's a far better catcher to that to that team.
Okay.
And they play better with him behind the dish because yep. runners don't run.
Mm,
well, we didn't run because
you know he's
well. You got up. Mitch Sheldon Collins on the mound as a lefty,
yeah.
with a pretty good pickoff move.
Yep.
It kind of shuts down the running game, so you can't get in motion, hitting runs, and all that sort of stuff. So you've got to find a way to win rather than taking advantage
yeah.
with a lesser catcher or a lesser arm on the mound. So with him behind the dish, I find that he makes Bomb Beach a better side.
Okay, that's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how they run their pitching on the Sunday, but we're leaning towards Moynton on that one. And Dandenong will play Dingley, and that'll be an interesting one.
Very good.
Mate, yeah.
Yeah, we've always, well, since I've been a part of Dingley, that we've always had historically pretty good battles, regardless of personnel. We just match up really well. We invite the rah-rah as such, but you know, what's left at the end of Saturday will determine where we're at. I've penciled in Mitch Wilcox to throw mm-hmm. to start there. So he asked me 5 or 6 weeks back that he wanted Dandenong again mm-hmm. because when he came in last time, he kept him to 1 or 2 runs and we really had a chance to win there but just couldn't get over him that last time. So we've actually had some really good battles. Haven't obviously got the win, but we do, I think, pound for pound stack up against them pretty well. They've just got the better names, I think, at this stage of the league.
Now, who threw from that Sunday game that we called a few weeks ago, do you recall?
Liam Richardson.
Yeah, I think so. And he did a serviceable job,
Steve
I thought.
Collier in relief.
Yeah, and they did a serviceable job.
I think, depending on which way Clarko could flip-flop, because I think they got Bomb Beach on the Saturday, didn't they?
Yeah. So we're not scared. I've tried to instill our boys, I don't care who's on the mound, and last time we played, Surtees started, we scored 4 off him in the first, and Chico came in, and we ended up putting 10 runs on the ladder leader. So we don't have any fear of who we're going to face in this league.
It's going to be interesting how he sort of plays that one this weekend, whether he sort of goes with his guys from the seconds and then bounces back with Surtees.
You can't flirt with form this late in the year, so I think you've got to try, and winning form's good form.
Play
and
your if best team.
I think it'll be an interesting game, but I just think maybe Dandenong.
All right, now, and the fourth game, and this will be the Adams Pest Control match of the round, match of the day on the Sunday. 1 o'clock, we're starting, 1 till 4. So let's hope the weather's nice. And it's Cheltenham playing Frankston, and gee, this is going to be a rip
it's
of a game. Isn't
this
it a
will
cracker?
Be a cracker.
Absolute cracker.
And I have got no idea who's going to win this game.
Mm-hmm.
I've got no idea who's going to throw it either.
And that's the thing. It depends. This game is
Cheltenham still have a couple
air.
Of young kids who can yeah. throw. There's no doubt about that. So they've got
a
lot
depends
good young arms.
On who pitches for how long
yeah.
on Saturday.
Yeah.
And what arms are then available for Sunday for both teams
yeah.
as to how this game's going. Massive game for both teams, particularly on the back of, you know, we're looking Saturday, we're expecting Cheltenham to beat Boneo. Frankston Dingley's going to be a flip of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's going to be a massive game.
Well, come Sunday, if results go Dingley's way, just looking forecasting, if Saturday results go Dingley's way in front of Frankston, and do we get up? That's 3 teams on 18, with Berwick playing Mornington. If Berwick get up like we've picked here, that's 19. So there's 1 point between 3rd and 5th or 6th.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly even year in terms of those positions. We don't have to worry about Dandenong. They're going to sell up top spot. But
and Berwick's likely to be second unless they fall over this weekend somewhere along the line.
Well,
way you'd think.
How many games you got left?
Two after this weekend.
Four in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Four. So it's actually almost a mathematical impossibility for Berwick to go out of the four.
Unless they lost both
they,
of...
Yeah,
oh,
they
yeah.
they
no,
won't
no,
get
no,
out of the four.
I don't think they can.
No,
because
no.
They're,
one and two are
no, I'm thinking
in the finals.
Top spot, I'm
because
second
eight
spot,
point,
I'm thinking.
They're 8
yeah.
points clear of fifth.
Yes.
I think if Berwick win one more in the last four, they've
yeah.
got second spot.
They're there. Yeah.
They're there, which we've picked them to beat, which you guys have picked them to beat Mornington, so that should be 1 and 2 sorted. So it's definitely 3, 4, 5 and 6 playing for those final two spots.
All right. So that'll be interesting, so you can tune in, and we hope to be getting you around the grounds as well. Jack can have his little phone and text some messages out if he's in a good mood. Let's have a break. And after the break, we'll come back to talk about winter ball. Listen to the ball game. It's brought to you by Adams Pest Control.
The Heritage Tavern is a 1930s house set on 2 acres of beautiful gardens, serving tasty meals and drinks from Mornington Peninsula produce. Enjoy a meal and live music on the Heritage Deck every Sunday. The Heritage Tavern is a proud sponsor of the Blues Shack and Sunday Sessions live music shows on RPPFM. The Heritage Tavern, 3059 Frankston Flinders Road, Balnarring. Phone 59832597.
Did you know that Bendigo Community Bank supports our local sporting clubs, including the Mornington Peninsula Nepean Football League, the Mornington Peninsula Junior Football League, the Mornington Netball Association, Nepean Netball Association, MPCA Cricket Association, and RPPFM. With all the usual banking and financial advice, the Bendigo Community Bank branches in Rye, Dramana and Rosebud are putting people back into banking. A station sponsor.
Interested in gadgets, the web, high-tech, or astronomy? Beyond Infinity.
Beyond Infinity. Beyond Infinity.
On Tuesdays from 11 a.m, your weekly fix of science and technology on Radio Port Phillip.
This is Jess from Oasis Pop-Up Bakery and Cafe in Mornington. Our new home is at the corner of Nepean Highway and Benton's Road. We're all about nourishing food, music, conversation and community. So we're super proud to support our favourite local community radio station, RPPFM, as program sponsors of Your Story Counts with Nan Abbott. Pop into our new home for breakfast, lunch or a coffee, Monday to Sunday, and enjoy the show.
Johnny?
Mm?
I think I've solved your dirty car problem with WeWash Mobile.
Wow, looks brilliant.
It sure is. And they cleaned it here right at home. Remember, wherever you are on the peninsula, WeWash Mobile come to you. Mobile detailing at its absolute best and great value.
Andy, I'm sold.
Me too. Here's their number, 9783 4031, or you can book online at wewashmobile.com.au. Call them now.
Station sponsor.
Welcome back to the ball game, and we're going to look at winter ball. And just interestingly, first, Phil, Research Watsonia, we talked a bit about that game last week, yep. And Research got a win 5-3. They've knocked off every side in it, haven't they?
They've really built up. They've beaten all the teams above, or the two teams above them, and then all the teams around them, yeah, in the four as well, at least once. So, they're a very good side, and... Their pitching has probably been their slight weakness in the early part of the season, and that's...
So who have they picked up, or what have they done about
Lee
their
McKay,
pitching?
Lee McKay's back in on the mound for them. Hasn't pitched in the early part of the season, but he's starting to work into form, and he's a colossal pitcher, two-time former league MVP, so that really bolsters their pitching, and we certainly know about the potency of their offense with the most runs scored for in the league. So yeah, they're a serious contender. Currently sitting third, but only half a game behind the joint leaders Heathmont and Forest Hill. So that was a big win. But there was a couple of interesting scores last week. I mean, North Baldwin, who sit in equal fourth spot out on percentage behind Watsonia, they had an opportunity to get into the four, but dropped the game to the Giant Killers Greensboro.
Actually, Greensboro is probably going to be the side that's...
We said a third or halfway through the season, yeah, that they'd had a horror start to the year, but they were going to be the team, whilst they wouldn't make it themselves.
They're going
to
shape the
impact
four
on the four, and they've very definitely done that.
Yeah.
Very definitely done that. And over the final few weeks, They've got an opportunity to do that as well, because they play in the second last game, they play Research, and then in the last game they play Forest Hill.
Okay.
So they could have a massive impact on how the four finish, or in fact will have a massive impact on how the four finishes up.
So in recent weeks we've knocked off Watsonia and North Bourne, as you
said. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So Watsonia, courtesy of that result, are still hanging in there in fourth spot, and so their game against Forest Hill becomes really, really critical for both teams. Watsonia need to win that to stay in the four, and Forest Hill also need to win that game to maintain their position, currently second on percentage, equal with points with Heathmont. So big game that tomorrow at Billabong Park between Watsonia and Forest Hill.
Actually, I think we should call off the DBA tomorrow and just all pop down to Billabong
Park. Other interesting game, of course, North Bourwin play.
That's its real name, is it, Billabong Park?
Billabong Park's the name. It's not because it always floods.
No,
it's
I was just wondering about that.
Yeah. Whether it got that name because of that, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was Billabong before they put grass down.
North Bourwin versus Watsonia. Again, North Bourwin versus Essendon.
Should win one.
Should win that, that will get them, potentially into fourth spot if Forest Hill get over Watsonia. Research Ringwood is an interesting game. Ringwood need to win that game to keep their finals hopes alive. They're at the moment half a game out, but the big thing in their favour is their very, very good percentage. They've got the second best percentage in the league, largely due to the lack of runs that they've given up. They're pitching Andrew Jones and Riley Hodgson's done a really, really good job in restricting other teams. They just haven't been able to give those guys the run support. So
I think their biggest problem is they're playing Research out at Research, who play their ground
extremely well.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And are in great nick at the moment.
Exactly right. I mean, I would think Research will win that game, and that's going to make it hard for Ringwood then. That'll put them at least, I would suspect, a game and a half out of the four with just two games to play. It's starting to become really difficult. We're almost starting to get the stage where we've got mathematical possibility or mathematical certainties and mathematical impossibilities. And GMBC is another one this week. They're clinging in seventh spot, but again, only half a game out of the four, but they've got to play Heathmont, and I think Heathmont will be filthy after dropping last week's game, and I think in that situation they'll come out, and that will probably be curtains for GMBC. Again, that would put them a game and a half out of the four with not a great percentage.
Who's been on the hill for GMBC this year?
Andy Mann's been doing the bulk of their pitching, and he's been supported by Russell Spear. It's a bit tough for Russ. He's has a cafe, and so he works till about 2 o'clock, 2:30, leaves the cafe, come and then comes to the games, gets loose and sort of comes in and pitches the last little bit. But if you weren't a serious competitor like him, you just never get by doing that. But look,
do you think Andy Mann's got the goods to sort of hold Heathmont?
Andy Mann's got the goods to, on his day, to beat any team. Yeah. He's high quality. Again, GMBC's issues, I think, have largely revolved around offensive consistency. Yeah. They struggled early part of the year to actually score runs and give both Russell and Andy the necessary run support to win those games. And they've got a young defence that I think is still learning. A little bit like Jack's boys, that they're investing time into those young kids, and that'll bear fruit from next year, the year after, but it's just been a little bit of a battle. But long answer to your question, Boof, Manny, class act, could beat anybody.
So they're half a chance, really, aren't they?
Oh, they're half a chance.
And if they've got their nose in front and Spearsy comes in towards the end, after serving his lattes and cappuccinos.
Of course they're a chance.
Anything can happen.
Any pitching staff that's got Andy Mann and Russell Spear pitching for them is a chance to beat anybody, big chance to beat anybody. Heathmont are still a very, very dominant side, and are still, firm favourites to win the flag. Mm. They've got very good pitching. Gibbons and Wilson give them great pitching,
but they've got good hitting all the way down.
They hit 1-9.
Yeah.
We were very good last week.
Even the bench hits.
We were very, very good last week. Yeah. Taylor pitched 5 really good innings, worked out of a couple of jams. Defence made some terrific plays behind him. You know, got it through a guy out at the plate on a first and third situation, and really made some good plays. And then Mitch Lay came in, hit a solo home run to break the three all deadlock, and then pitched three innings of perfect relief.
Yeah.
We were the real deal last week, and I'm not being disrespectful for Heathmont. They played very, very well. It was a cracking game of baseball. You know, I actually have had the pleasure to witness two of the best games of baseball this year that I've seen for a long time. The one-all draw that North Baldwin and Forest Hill played earlier in the year, and then the game on Saturday. Both the highest quality games, good pitching, clutch hitting, and some very, very good defence. So I think Heathmont will get the job done. So the other games, Doncaster v Greensboro at Deep Creek Reserve.
Greensboro
quite easily. I'm gonna tip my boys over Watsonia. I think we're going well. And
I think you got the form behind you, I think, at this stage, where Watsonia's starting to sort of...
Yeah, the concern for us is the Watsonia have got the two former Sarno boys and Luke Abels on the hill. Now, if all three of them are on, it's tough to score runs. So,
But not impossible.
The flip side is that our pitchers and defence are going really well. So I think we'll get over the line there.
And
Watsonia
don't score a lot of runs.
No, they don't. That's been the problem for them.
What's the advantage of being second, because you said hoping for a top two?
Oh, we play the old first versus second, third versus fourth. So you get your automatic double chance.
Yeah. And home games there finals at La Trobe.
The first week of the finals, it's the highest placed team.
Yep.
We play at their venue. And then the preliminary and grand finals are played at La Trobe.
All right. And just looking at B grade... Latrobe won't be playing in those. They'll be able to get the ground ready. Waverley and Knox, Westgarth, Melbourne Uni, top four. St Kilda and Croydon, fifth and sixth. And surprisingly, you've got a side second sixth, Croydon, who have got a 7-8 record. So,
well, of course, they had the...
The reorganisation. Well,
the 14,000 teams in B grade to start with, and then the top six stay in B grade, and the others make up B2 or whatever they call it, apples and oranges.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they actually call it. But, I mean, Waverley haven't lost a game.
Yep.
A couple of weeks ago, they played Knox, who was second, beat them 10-0.
And 188-4-36 against. They're handy stats.
you wouldn't want to come up against it. You'd want to be on that team for sure. But then I'd like the challenge, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right.
Why not?
And haven't Waverley finished pretty high up and got knocked off in the B-grade finals the last couple of years?
They have. I'm not sure whether it's... I think it's definitely four. It might even be five.
Wow.
In a row they've lost.
Gee.
Fantastic.
So they're
so there you go, Jack. You don't.
I wouldn't want to go in undefeated. That's a huge monkey on
their back. They have a massive monkey on their back. One, you're absolutely right. The fact that they look like they could go in undefeated, but B, they've just had all these grand final losses, and you know
that eats away at the third, fourth, and fifth inning.
Yeah. When the opposition all of a sudden you've
if it's tied, you've been the sort of 3-2 and
lead off double or something.
That's
just
right.
You've
and
won
the crowd
every game,
starts saying, "Here we come! Here it is happening again!" That sort of stuff.
Yeah. It's
seen some funny things happen in finals baseball.
Absolutely,
it's an absolute disease if you start losing grand finals on the trot. I went through that with the '80s with a side called Bomb Beach, and you almost learned to celebrate being close to getting it.
Yeah, but your problem was you were playing Monash.
Yeah, who were the forerunner for the Waverley Red ABL side.
Yeah, indeed. Look, I've only got about a minute or so to go. Jack, any final conclusions about the Little League, Junior League stuff that you were involved with this year? They're pretty pleased with the development of some of the kids there?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I think we're getting there. I can't say that we're 100% on the right path, because that would be incompetent of myself saying that we can't learn. Mm. But we have our area, and a lot of the kids come from the DBA area, is pretty strong.
Good.
We have a pretty good competition in the junior league. In the junior league as a whole, I'm not talking about that age group, but collectively you're seeing a lot of good kids come through, I think.
Speaking of that, little Genevieve Beacom.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say,
girl, she's fantastic. She's going to be picked in a national team for a for an open tournament.
Yeah,
and
she's fantastic. She's a pleasure to work with.
Yeah, can you tell about where she come from? What's the background there?
Cheltenham.
Yeah. But fantastic action. Learns, listens, does everything the right way. She is fantastic to work with. I've had the pleasure of working with last year, but she's a big game pitcher. I think you've seen on the international stage, I think she threw 2 innings the other day, 4 strikeouts, 5 strikeouts, but even dating back to the rescheduled final for the Little League, where she threw against, I think, the end-up champions, where she struck out 10 in 4.1 innings. So she can definitely mix it with the best for her age group, and I wouldn't be surprised if she goes further.
And I think she's with the Mavericks at the moment over in Japan.
She's with the Cal Ripken, Australian Cal Ripken.
She was with the Mavericks. But also, there's another kid, Ryan Langworthy, he's at the under 12 World Cup team as well. That was a great story.
He was dragged out of the DBA side to go do that. Yeah. So well done to the young.
Probably the right choice, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Probably want to put on the Australian jersey.
Absolutely would.
But it just goes to show that little kids in our area are progressing and can make it on the world stage, and they are performing. We're not just making up numbers.
Which is good to see. And of course, one of our other colleagues that we've spoken to a couple of times over at in America at the he'll be back soon, I guess.
Barry? He's over at the Cal Ripken at the moment.
Yeah, so when he gets back, he'll give a bit of a report about how things went.
Yep.
Which is sensational. Look, you've been listening to the ball game. No other little messages there, Rob?
No, apart from either, I think there's some little Indonesian league or something going on up in Lismore somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I think it is Lismore.
As long as it doesn't rain.
It'll rain.
A lot of money going into that facility.
Yeah.
A lot of money going in.
Good to see that. Money.
I saw a tractor stuck in the middle of centre field when I was up there a few weeks ago.
That's all right. I've seen pictures of them jet skiing on the field.
Fantastic. Great. No, it'd be good. Need a lot of dirt in there to raise that from the riverbanks.
Absolutely right.
But the ABF keep scheduling national championships.
Amazing. Florida Wall.
Right, if you listen to the ball game, don't forget we'll be back at 1 o'clock on Sunday to the live baseball game. Hope you enjoyed it. See you then.
Sliced to left field, and it's another chance for Mitchell, and he makes a barehanded catch!
In my entire life, I've never seen that happen.
Fernandez, left field, it's deep!